Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom, hosted by Adam Sartwell.
Hi, everyone, all of our listeners. Before I talk about who is with us today, let us get into sacred space. So take a deep breath. Bring yourself into this present moment. And I call to the Great Spirit. I call to the two who move as one through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. I call upon the goddess, the maiden, the mother, and crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. We call to the God, Lord of light and Lord of darkness, God of the green and the gold, God of the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever, so mote it be. So I am here with Erica Barron, the Gemini lead minister for the queer spirit.
Yeah, deputy, but yeah.
Deputy, yeah. Well, not lead. Ugh, man, I was doing so well there. So Erica, tell us, how do you spiritually identify?
Yeah, this is a good question. So I am actually ordained in two different traditions. So the Temple of Witchcraft is one of them. Mm-hmm. I'm also ordained as a Unitarian Universalist minister. And depending on when you ask me, my degree of identification with both of those traditions varies. For those of you who are not familiar with Unitarian Universalism, it's a sort of descendant tradition of Protestant Christianity, but at this point, very eclectic is the word that witches would use for this.
Yeah.
So very diverse theologically and in other ways, and incredibly progressive. So I appreciate a lot of things about it, but also can be overly rational. And some days I'm like, yeah, no. And I also identify as a witch in the Temple of Witchcraft. That's also important to me. I also am a devotee of Hermes. That's another key part of my spiritual identity. And so I, articulate that differently depending on the context, but yeah. Those are kind of the pillars of it.
Yeah. And I know that Unitarians also have like a pagan-esque branches, or I don't know how they really put it. But
yes.
I remember, going to pagan like cups events in Burlington way back in the day.
Yes.
It is, they're very open to all traditions as long as they're some sort of spirituality to it.
Yes. At our best, that is who we are. Yeah.
Yeah. You sort of started it, I think. What is your spiritual origin story?
Yeah. So I was brought up in Unitarian Universalism. So in the 1980s, when I was a kid, there was this joke that Unitarian Universalists are atheists with children, because there were so many like grown-ups who had left their religions who wanted, didn't go to church until they had kids and were like, oh, we got to teach these kids something about spirituality. And a lot of people, including my parents, who didn't want a particularly narrow view of religion, found their way to Unitarian Universalism. So I was brought up in the UU congregation, actually, in Burlington, Vermont. And the atheist thing was really important to my family when I was a kid. And so that was a like key part of my identity, right up until high school, when I had an experience of the goddess. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess deities are a thing. So there are, there's a long version of that story, but the short version of that story is that I figured out that I was queer. And by then my family had started going to this much smaller UU congregation, and I now know that they would have been affirming of that, but at the time, like, it wasn't a thing that anyone ever talked about. And I think this is really important for any spiritual community to understand that because spiritual communities have so often been hostile to queer people, saying nothing equates to creating a hostile environment, whether that's what you intend or not. You have to be proactively affirmative to make that space welcoming. So, so I was having this sort of crisis of identity, and then had this experience of sort of divine feminine embrace, if you will. And like, cool, except that I was still in the middle of an identity crisis and still a teenager and, you know, whatever. So then I went off to college, and I would say I was dabbling in sort of eclectic paganism at the time. So I read Scott Cunningham's first book. And then, like, there are a million ways you can find Witchcraft 101. Like, it's everywhere, right? So that's kind of what I did through college. And then seminary, which is the training you have to do to become a UU minister. And that was sort of, you know, variously, like, I kind of came and went in how deep I did that. And then once I graduated from seminary and was serving as a minister in congregations, I preached this sermon one time about how, you know, this is a flawed analogy, but just accepting it for a minute, the analogy that, like, different spiritual traditions are like paths through the same forest. Okay, but what Unitarian Universalists tend to do is go like 2 yards down one path and then go back to the beginning, and then go 2 yards down another path and go back to the beginning. And I was like, I wonder what would happen if we actually like followed one a little further. And then I got home that afternoon, I was like, oh, I'm talking to myself there. So I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who's also a pagan UU minister, and I was like, I'm just really frustrated by the like, I can, like, there's no progress. It's all just 101, which I could tell you at this point. Like, I te could teach that class at this point, but I don't feel like I'm progressing at all. And he was like, hey, you should look up the work of Christopher Pensack. And I was like, cool. So I got the Inner Temple book, and was doing it by myself until I was like 3/4 of the way through it. And I was like, this Christopher guy, he's gotta like be on the physical plane somewhere. Probably in California, because all the cool people are in California, but like, I might as well look it up. I was living in Vermont at the time. I was like, oh, New Hampshire, like that's right here. Like, that's not, you know, a plane ride away. So I went to a couple of the rituals back at the Masonic Temple, which we're returning to, but and finished Witchcraft 1. And it was like one of the key things for me that besides that there's actually a lot of alignment between the temples, sort of, if it works for you, do it. If it doesn't, don't. Like, not doctrinaire approach to the world that's very similar, resonant with Unitarian Universalism. But also, as a minister, I am trained to lead ritual experiences for groups of people. And not everybody can do that. And like, the number of solo practitioners who then try and lead rituals for like 30 people and have no idea how to actually lead a group of people through a ritual is something I had experienced a lot. So the first couple of rituals that I went to in the temple, I was like, oh, these people actually know what they're doing. Like, I can actually do this thing. So I've got something to learn here. So then I took the rest of, so Witchcraft 2 through 5 online, because although New Hampshire was there, it was a couple hours drive and I wasn't going to do that every month.
Yeah, it is over a Connecticut River and through
Yes, right, exactly. Yes.
the woods.
So I did that. I, you know, while still being a UU minister. And so, yeah, it's kind of how we get to today. Somewhere, yeah, and it was in Witchcraft 2. Like, there's all these exercises in Witchcraft 2 where you have to do things that correspond to all the planets, right? So, like, there's the stone for every planet, there's the herb for every planet, whatever. All of these, like, attunements to the planets. And they all felt very vague to me, except for Mercury, which was like, there's a person standing behind me. And that's how I started working with Hermes, Mercury. So that's another piece of it. But yeah, that's probably where we can stop for now.
Okay. So you are the deputy of Gemini Ministry that deals with aspects of the queer spirit. So can you talk to us about what the queer spirit is and how do you, what does one work with it?
Sure. So queer spirit, as with queerness itself, is hard to define because its nature is to defy definition and being sort of boxed or captured in that way. So queerness is often defined negatively. That is not like judgmentally, but it is that too. But meaning defined by what it's not. So like it's not straight, gender binary, sort of whatever the lines are for a given society. It's whatever is not that. Which, you know, okay, except that there is a spiritual current there. It's not just a, there is a there. It's just very hard to talk about. Or to pin down in any way. So, but there is, so part of that energy is about rebellion, transgression, kind of the asking why the limits are there by walking over them, trying to take down any that are only there because they serve like a small group of people, and don't serve life, if you will. So the archetype of Gemini in the temple is the trickster. And so there's a lot of overlap between queerness and trickster energy. So Steve, who's the Gemini lead minister, says that he thinks the question of the trickster is why, which you can ask in like a million ways, like why or why or and sort of to again to like question anything that is hardening into doctrine or assumption that can't be questioned. And so that's definitely part of queerness. And given that, so and queer community as it has existed sort of in the modern age, if you will, in the United States, is made up at least of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, non-binary people, plus, you know, that list keeps getting longer, which again is an indication of that, like, yeah, go ahead and try and list it, and we're gonna find another thing to add to it, right? But because of the, you know, that group, that community taken together, is often is also about ways of loving each other. That are outside of the prescribed narrow I idea and ways of like being in the world gender-wise, but also in other ways that are outside of the expectations or the strictures. So that like breaking free energy. Yeah, so that's all part of queer spirit.
Yeah. I mean, I almost think there are almost archetypal things about people who experience the queer spirit of like they have to ask a question to, find themselves, and I think that's why our definitions of ourselves have expanded because we find that there are more people in the queer community who express their love or their identity in a different way than people have accepted. I'm going to put that in quotations, accepted. So it does sometimes push that envelope a little bit further.
And I also think the process of discovering your own identity in opposition to what has been like told as who you should be, right?
Spoon fed to you.
Is very much the shadow work of Witchcraft 3. It's the same journey, we just use different words for it. But the like coming to terms with the piece of yourself that you have tried to push away, and like integrating that into who you are to the extent that it is not just like tolerated, but like really part of you. That's also part of the spiritual work, is that like embrace of things that have been attempted to be cast out.
To form a more cohesive whole. At least I think, like, that's the, it's that whole it's Solve Coagula, experience. So you have said that all gods are queer. Can you unpack that statement for us?
So first of all, on the very basic level, almost all deities, if you read enough of their mythology, have either crossed gender lines or had relationships with other entities of the same gender, or both. In fact, a lot of deities, both. For example, Zeus has this long list of mortal females that he's had relationships with, but he also has a relationship with Ganymede. And then there are deities who, like, most of their lovers in mythology are the same gender, such as Apollo. And it's more common in, so when you're talking about goddesses, it's hard to tell the difference between queerness and just misogyny sometimes. Because a lot of goddesses are described as manlike, and it's hard to tell whether that's because they're like on the line of non-binary, or whether that's just because we don't like women and we like men, and so good women are described as manlike.
Or they have power. And so
So they must
thus
be
we're like,
manlike, right?
oh, well, they must be very manly.
There's a strong tradition in certainly in Greek and Roman mythology and in other traditions of asexual goddesses, which is also part of the queer umbrella. So on that level, but stepping back from that, if we think about queerness as transgressing the rules about things like love and sexuality and gender and presentation and expression and all of that, there isn't, it is part of the nature of deity to be able to move outside of those rules. Like, we created them, the gods didn't. And they could care less what we decide they can't do. So they all move outside of our boxes. That's part of who they are. And so therefore they are queer, because that is queerness. And I can also, I could make a case for individual gods and goddesses, but that's my case for all of them, is like, yeah, they don't live inside these structures. Transcending them is who they are.
I feel like also, like, the gods have been around a long time, and we sometimes forget that they moved with us as well, and that they are modern things. So, like, I know for myself, I've had this kind of shook me for a while of, like, Hecate decided to just show up to me in all of her guises. And so, like, I had series of meditations and whatever, but one time she showed up, like, looking like the former Queen of England, with a dog in her purse and a flashlight.
That's
And I was
awesome.
like, that is so modern. Like, I can't. But they are not bound by what we think they are, because they're connected to, well, at least I think they're connected to something that is greater, that is beyond boundary, and we can't name it, because once we do, it gets even bigger, like, yeah, so yeah.
So, like, also, for example, I think the internet is the ultimate expression of Hermes. Like, immediate worldwide ability to communicate
And get information,
and get information.
trick
Like,
people.
like, all the truth is there, so is everything else.
All the
You
lies
have to,
too.
like, discern it. So, yeah, for sure.
Excellent. So I know you're planning to have a temple representation at the Pride March in Boston. What goes into becoming a marshal for this event? And also, how can the community support the event?
Yeah, so we are marching in Boston Pride because we're near Boston. But a thing that I've been working on for a while now that will hopefully be ready before June this year is ways that people in the temple can sign up to march in their own pride, like the one that's near you, under our name. So watch out for that. But in Boston, so the story of Boston Pride is complex, but basically it dissolved in the years after 2020 in a dispute about the nature of Pride, which we can get into if you want, but has been reborn as Boston Pride for the People. I think we're coming up on the 3rd year. And so if you want to like lead a group in Boston Pride, you have to sign up as a group that's marching and tell them how many people and whether you're bringing a vehicle or not. We generally don't because that just seems like a lot of like extra
It's a
work.
lot of, yeah.
And
A lot of, yeah.
I don't own a flatbed truck. So anyway, and then you have to basically watch their training every year, which is like, this is the route. These are the things you can't do. Like these are the, this is how, you know, stay wide across the road so the crowds don't encroach. Don't drink, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Don't shoot glitter into the crowd.
Right, no
They
glitter.
brought that down.
Yeah, in
I
fact,
used
you
to
can't.
weaponize it back in
Yeah,
the
you
day.
can't even throw things at. You can't even throw candy anymore. Like you
No.
have to hand things to
You have to
people.
hand things to
Yes.
people.
So anyway, you do that, and then you are. So we need one of those people for every 25 people in our group. So far, we have not gotten close to 25. So it's just been me. But you know, if we do, we can do that. So how people can support it. So one thing is to come march with us. It's super fun. It's like, oh my goodness, the
The
just
energy
the
is
energy
amazing.
high at Pride is like, it's so amazing. It's like the best ritual experience ever, like that kind of like energy. This year we will be I'm still like, this is in very early stages of thought, but my thought is that we're going to be designating marchers to carry the specific energies represented by the rainbow. So if you wanna, you know, do one of those, let me know.
All right.
So come march with us, and you can also march. So march, I suppose I should use quotes for that, because you can come with us in wheelchairs or with walkers, like any mobility things that you need. We can make that happen. But if you don't want to be with us in the march, you can also come and support us from the crowd, which is also an amazing experience. The one downside of being in the parade is that you can't watch the parade. So you only like
True.
ever see the groups that are like right in front of you and right behind you. So if you want to see all of Boston Queerdom in all its glory, like come and just shout to us when we pass. And then yeah, if you're not in Boston, consider marching in your own pride for us.
I think those are great ways to sort of help bring about awareness, and I feel like for those who might not have experienced Pride and what it is, I feel like its history starts, it's a riot. It was a riot at first, and over the years we've made it into a parade, and and it does bring awareness to queer issues and things like that. And I know we're very focused on the queer in this episode, but it's also our allies. It's our, our friends and the people who know us, and all of that, coming out to support us and make us feel like we still exist, and that we're not going to get, and in this time, it's, I get a little emotional. In this time, it's really important.
Yeah, let me just say a word about straight people at Pride. So, Pride is absolutely for everybody. So if you are straight and have never been to Pride before, please come. It's awesome. It's meant to be for, like, it's not a queer only space. But it is a queer dominant space, which means if you're straight and coming to Pride, you don't get a say in how we are showing up. This is really important because even among queer people, well, gay and lesbian people anyway, maybe not people who identify as queer specifically, but anyway, there's often a debate about like decorum versus sort of full wild queer energy. And Pride is supposed, like, my opinion on this, which is
Not
not at all
everyone's.
ambiguous, is that the point of Pride is visibility as the entirety of the queer spectrum, all the way from like I am actually quite quote unquote conservative in the way that I dress and like my demeanor in the world, so me, all the way to like the people in leather, the people in drag, the people dancing, all of it belongs at Pride. So come and enjoy that because it's amazing. But understanding that's what you're entering, right? There's also often a debate about whether children belong at Pride. Absolutely, children belong at Pride. It's fun. Like the amount of play really that queer community does when we're together is like it's really great for kids. It's like it's a similar level of like silliness and costume and music and movement and all all the things that kids love. So yeah, absolutely, bring your kids.
And I think if there's something that stirs up questions, comments, that's a conversation you should be having with your kids, to go, this exists in the world, and I may not understand it, but it does exist, and needs to, like, if you have more questions, let's research it together. Instead of, shutting down and be like, oh, I can't have that. Oh, stuff.
Right, and
Anyway.
also your kids may be queer.
Yeah.
Like this is also important for young queer people to see adult queer people
Yeah.
like being joyful and alive and
Yeah. And like, I remember my parents took me to Provincetown for a vacation. And it was just, they wanted to do something fun and get out and whatever. And it was the first time I'd ever seen two men walking hand in hand. And it made such an impression on me because I was like, what's going on? They, like, are they like me? Kind of things that you're not going to get if you're just ho-hum at home watching, whatever. So we've sort of talked about this already, but what can you tell us about the importance of queer sacred space at rituals, as well like the fires of the queer spirit that we have at Templefest or even Boston Pride?
So, with queerness, as with any other sort of marginalized identity, there are different spaces that are important. So, it's important for there to be queer visibility in spaces that are dominated by not queer people, right? That's sort of one thing. Then, Pride is, like I said, for everybody, but it's queer dominant and made, and that's important. And it's important for people who are not queer to experience that because, like, it's part of the world and yeah. And then there is an importance for spaces that are specifically and only for queer people. And that is because there is a level of safety and sort of vulnerability that you can really only have within your own community. And like I said, this is true for like this is not just true for queer people, right? This is true for a lot of communities that you need your own space so you can be fully yourself and not worry that you're being listened to by somebody who doesn't like get it on some level. Although all of us, of course, have our own individual experiences, but there's a connection there. So The Fires of the Queer Spirit is a ritual that Steve wrote with someone else. I can never remember who the other person is. That's like much of Steve, deceptively simple. Like it's, I can tell you in 5 minutes how to do it, and it's incredibly effective. So that is designed for a circle of people, all of whom are queer. So we do that every year at Temple Fest. And then we also have queer sacred space like all the time at Temple Fest. It's one of the spaces that like exists for the whole of Temple Fest. So that you people who are queer who are at Temple Fest can like go there and be in that like spiritual energy whenever you want to or need to. So that will be true this year too. So come find us.
So.
And if you haven't experienced the fires of the queer spirit and you are queer, like come do that too, because it's really quite something.
Yeah, having done like we used to go to a gay men's festival. And the only way I could describe it to people was to, like thinking of straight people and things like that. Because I used to work in a school and I'd have to explain why I was going and, be like, I'm going as a clergy, like I'm here to do this work and whatever. And I'd say to them, well, imagine just for a moment, that you are unlike everyone in your area. And then suddenly you are dropped into a place where everyone is somewhat like you. And you get to feel that like camaraderie and, like that safety, that energy. And, it's much like the rest of the world is for you, So it's like suddenly I'm in a place where I'm the, dominant, whatever logo, whatever. And, it changes you. In the fact that, like there were lots of men who were like, oh, we need to have this every year. We need to, I need to go every year. I need to be experienced it. I need to be with my brothers. I'm going to put that in quotations because I hate when people put family stuff on onto that. Just because, like I have brothers and if you were
That's
my
a different thing.
brother, I'd smack you, So, so there is that, but it is a beautiful energy. And it's so interesting to me because there are so like there's a deepness of spirituality and craft that can be intertwined with the queer aspects that I don't think I could have experienced anywhere else. And just like thinking about it, like we had Arishka Gall rituals. Of like and I got to be one of the guardians, so like I was like, I'm the heart, you have to stop here, like that kind of thing. So it just had a magic of its own. It's
Yeah, it does, right? Because it's on magical current. Let me just say also for temple spaces, so like I don't control who gets to go to Boston Pride, but for within the temple, things that are designated as queer only, I use a very expansive definition of queer. So if you think you belong, you belong. I am not interested in policing the boundaries of queerness because, first of all, it's not a good way to treat people, but also once you start policing the boundary, it's not queer anymore. It's antithetical to what queerness is. So, we include at least gay men, lesbians, bisexual people, transgender people, non-binary people, asexual people, aromantic people, polyamorous people, and the world of kink. But
And pansexuals and
trans, right, yes. We only stop at what I don't know, not because there's like categories that
There's
rule.
got to be something else
So
I
if you
don't
think you
know.
belong, you belong.
I know
Right. Yeah, I keep discovering things.
I went to a it was like a it was a class on how to, as a hypnotist, to be open for and show people that you support them and all of that. But the guy went through, like he found the longest string of letters.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, we're gonna go through all of these, da, da, da. And he kept asking us if we knew them. And I had to give myself a gold star. I was like, oh, that's kink, that's pansexual, that's and the guy was like, wow, you really know your stuff. I'm like, well, like, how do you not?
I did this art project last year based on the like colors of all the flags, and there were 20 of them in that project, and like I did not do all of them because like you can't, they go on forever. So yeah.
They do. Which I think is good that
Yeah.
that it does. So what can people who are our members or do to help support LGBTQIA and beyond members, but especially our trans members, because they are I'm feeling under attack, and they
They are under
literally
attack.
are.
Yes. So right now, the federal government is basically erasing trans people out of anything that they have control over. So, for example, all references to trans people have been taken off the website of the Stonewall Memorial, because it's a national memorial, which is so incredibly offensive. Stonewall was led by, initiated by, and led by trans women of color. And so if you take trans people out of it, we don't have Stonewall. Like you can't celebrate Stonewall without trans people. So that's just one of like many, many examples. And
Just for people who might not know what Stonewall
oh yeah,
is.
Stonewall. Okay, so Stonewall is named Stonewall because it happened at the Stonewall Inn, which is a gay bar in New York in 1969. And at the time in New York, but like in most major cities, gay bars were often raided by the police, and all the patrons sort of rounded up and arrested, often under laws that criminalized people for not wearing enough items of clothing that matched their gender. So again, like, if we erase trans people, like we erase this entire history. And for a long time, the community's response to that was to sort of like get out if you can, and then take care of your fellow community members when they are released. But in June of 1969, the patrons of the Stonewall Inn decided to fight back, kind of spontaneously. So if you read accounts of this, like somebody threw a brick at one of the police. We're not exactly sure who. People who were there have like named different people as a person who started this, but basically the patrons of the bar, led by, like I said, trans women of color, but also everybody else in the queer community, like started rioting and like physically kept the police from entering the bar or arresting anybody. And then like that went on until like the bar closed that night and every night for the next 5 nights. So it's June 29th through January or July 4th. So that is sort of considered the moment of the kickoff of the modern gay rights movement. Pride is actually a memorial of Stonewall. So the first Pride was in June of 1970 in remembrance of Stonewall, and every Pride since goes back to that. So the bar, it's still a bar. It's still like a
It is, yeah. I've been there. I've danced there, yes.
So
Long
anyway, it's
ago.
still there. And outside there is a like national monument in recognition of Stonewall. And now like it's absurd. It's absurd to try and erase transness from that, but and from all of the rest of life. So a lot of people and institutions are retreating from their support of trans people, like out of some sort of fear response to this like attempted erasure. And I would say, don't do that. Like, if there is ever a time that it is important to be as publicly supportive of trans people as you can possibly get, this is the time. And especially if you yourself, as I am, not trans, and therefore not vulnerable to that specific kind of erasure, even more important, because the people who are trans can't necessarily be out right now without risking At the very least, jobs, housing, etc., all the way up
Yeah.
to violence. So
Yeah.
it's really important for those of us who are not trans to be as visibly and vocally trans supportive as we can. And then, like, there's a whole bunch of practical things as well. So, depending on where you live, right now there are, like, especially in the United States, especially in the South, like, really horrific legislation being passed to criminalize trans healthcare, to criminalize parenting trans kids
Yeah.
in affirming ways. And so, like, if you live in one of those spaces, it's really important to push back against that, but also to be available, like to be a person that is safe, even if that's illegal, basically.
Yeah.
And then, if you're not living in one of those spaces, to just basically do everything you can. And then, whatever your like profession is, right? So if you're a doctor, like, study up on how you do trans supportive healthcare. If you're a teacher, like, find all the books for your like grade level at future trans characters, right? Whatever your thing in the world. So I currently work for the Unitarian Universalist Association. So my version of this is like, what are the ways that we are like supporting our trans folks in the South? How can we help with that? So trans children, minors, are particularly vulnerable right now. Being safe for them. And then I guess I would just end by saying there is like all of this legislation, every single solitary piece of it is based on misinformation. And you won't necessarily know the correct, I mean, you can go, this is patently absurd, but even I, who like am in this, couldn't have told you exactly where the like what the lies are and what the truth is without studying it. So like, go study it. So when people say like, well, there are only two biological genders, you can be like, actually no.
No, there are like five.
And I recommend in particular the podcast Maintenance Phase did a two-part sort of exposé of all of the quote unquote studies that back up anti-transness, that they're like, here are all of the methodological flaws and why these are stupid. So go listen to them because they're fun and snarky and smart.
Oh, so what is the best advice either you have been given or has been given to you that you can come up with that might be helpful for the community?
So I listened to the podcast, Dear Prudence, and they always start episodes with this, like, what is one piece of unsolicited advice? And whenever I imagine being on it, my piece of unsolicited advice is like, oh my God, talk to each other. Like, the number of issues between people that would be resolved if we were just upfront and emotionally honest with each other and said out loud why we feel the way we feel, like, life would get so much better. So, this is sort of the foundation of my own marriage. Like, we talk to each other, but it's not just, not just in sort of significant other relationships, but in all relationships. Like, the more honest and transparent we can be, the better. That's just sort of general life. In terms of like spirituality, I'm gonna embarrass you and say that like your "Are You Thinking Like a Witch" is like comes back to me at times in important ways. Oh right, I have this whole other set of tools that I haven't considered using. Speaking of the world seeming to be falling apart at the seams, we have this whole other set of tools. Are we using them? Also, this is like attributed to, I don't know, all great religious masters, especially any Buddhist teacher, so I don't know who actually said it first, but like, if your life, so the way I've heard it is like, if you sit in meditation for 30 minutes, if your life is too busy, meditate for an hour. So like, the things that you do to keep your own spirit and body and mind and heart okay and regulated and like aligned. When life is hard, do it more. And then like don't beat yourself up when you don't, because that's also life.
Yeah. We're not a religion of guilt.
No, right.
No.
Although some of us, have a hard time letting go of it, but it's not who we're meant to be. So
No. So, where can our listeners find you if they have questions or want to volunteer?
I have the best email address in the world, which is queerspirit@templeofwitchcraft.org. One of the reasons it's the best is because Google thinks my name is Queer Spirit, so whenever I log in, it says, "Hello, queer," and I'm like, "Hello, Google." So you can email me anytime, queerspirit@templeofwitchcraft.org. I'm happy to. One of the things that I think people sometimes are looking for is like, who can I go to with my questions who won't be offended? Because like, I'm wondering this thing, and if I ask, like, I don't want to ask somebody who's going to be hurt by it. That would be me. Ask me the things. So email me anytime with your questions, ideas for other queer things we can do in the temple, or if you want to be involved. We are ending tomorrow the current run of the Queer Mysteries course. And we're working on a course on trickster deities for the next round, so look out for that. Come find us at Templefest. Come march with us. And I'm like, the thing that I love the most in the world is being a minister to queer people. So like, if you need someone to talk to, at any of our events or just in general, like I am having this spiritual experience that has something to do with queerness and I don't know what to do with it, like reach out to me, because I love supporting my community in that way.
All right, thank you. All right, well, we'll close down our space and say goodbye to our listeners. We thank the Great Spirit and the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank the God, the Goddess, and the Lords and the Ladies, and even the Queer Spirit who move through us and work with us. May we recognize your presence in our lives. Blessed be. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Bye, listeners.
You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.